having a lot of things to think of at the same time. If I ask you to count some numbers, like in a weird way, you're gonna like allocate all these resources to this, so your brain is not gonna be able to work on something else, and maybe you're not gonna see that you're being full at this moment, being tired, being hungry, or all kind of things that can influence you as well. Just like all the things that can take resources from you are gonna make you more sensitive to all kind of other stuff. This, like when you go to like buying groceries and you're hungry, you're gonna be way more likely to like buy food that you don't need, for instance. If you have like a lot of your mind on your mind and you go into like this automatic type of thinking, you're gonna be influenced way more easily. It's just the fact that our brain has a limited amount of resources, especially right now with all the social media and like all the information that we get all the time. We get overwhelmed and we fall very easily into automatic type of thinking and acting. And that's why we take shortcuts and we fall victim to all kind of biases, because our brains can't handle an unlimited amount of information at the same time, and becomes very, yeah, very easy to fall victim to a lot of biases.
Hello there, friends. Welcome to the Happy Habit Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew. I talk health and well-being Mondays and Thursdays. If you are new, thank you for stopping by. If you're coming back for the first 10th or 50th time, well, it's very good of you to give me a little bit more of your attention today. Now, I am talking with Dr. Alice Paez. She is an associate lecturer in psychology at Goldsmiths University in London, and she has a particular fascination in magic, yes, and the psychology behind magic tricks. I'm talking about how magicians use psychology to manipulate, to influence, to force, to redirect, to misdirect and distract us in order to bamboozle us with their magic skills. Dr. Paez's research focuses on the use of magic tricks to study the illusory sense of agency or control. She specializes in studying the subtle factors that influence our decisions without our awareness. We see a trick performed, and rationally it doesn't make sense to us, but there it is before our eyes, and so we are left stunned and scratching our heads, searching for answers. We also learn that the brain often seeks out the simplest, most energy-efficient option, which causes us to adhere to habits or patterns of behaviour. Essentially, the brain operates on autopilot, which is when we are most vulnerable to being controlled or influenced. We hear about different techniques that magicians use to influence or force a person to do or believe something in order that they fall for the magic trick. Expect to learn about restriction and compliance and how they feature in a magician's act. We hear that it's exceptionally easy to influence people even when the person being influenced knows that they are being influenced or controlled by a magician. The good news is we can take the psychological lessons learned in the arena of magic and apply them in the real world so that we can reduce our likelihood of being influenced. This is a really interesting discussion about how our minds work and how we are so very easily influenced by external forces as well as internal forces and biases. While Dr. Paez uses the subject of magic to illustrate how the mind operates in terms of it being easily influenced, her observations on psychology apply to everyday life. Indeed, we are constantly being influenced by advertising, by media, and by friends and family. The key is to be aware of when we are being influenced so that we can be our own gatekeeper to that influence. Well, you have been fascinated by magic and initially hypnosis for years, and you were very curious about the psychological processes lying at the heart of magic. Which came first then for you? Was it your interest in magic or your interest in psychology?
It wasn't magic, actually. I think I was in magic as a child and as a teenager. I just love to learn tricks. I always liked of self-discipline and maybe courage to perform properly, but I always loved magic and loved to learn tricks. Then I kind of lost it. And I got into psychology. And then from psychology, I got back to magic thanks to a course which was a course in methodology, and we watched a video of Derren Brown, who's a British illusionist, mentalist, magician, doing what's called the like playing with the Barnum effect. So the fact that saying general statements might be taken as like something very personal, which explain what works in like astrology and stuff like this. And so I really liked it. I watched all of his shows, and he was doing some hypnosis as well. He's doing hypnosis as well. So I completely dived into it, met some magicians, hypnotists, and that's how I then combined everything, psychology and magic.
Now, you have given a definition for magic. You see it as a psychological conflict between the rational mind, your beliefs, and your emotions. Can you explain what you mean by this?
So yeah, it's a very psychological view of magic, and we can have different definitions. But basically, it's just a conflict between what you think is possible, what you believe is possible, and what you are experiencing. So when you're experiencing a magic trick, you like all your senses are telling you something specific, and you have an emotional response to something. You have the experience of something impossible, like a levitation, something disappearing, reappearing somewhere else. And you, at the same time, you know that it is not possible, or you have some beliefs that it is not possible. So that's the psychological definition of magic that we like to use. It's just this inner conflict, this cognitive conflict between your beliefs and what you think is possible, and your emotional experience, and like what your senses are telling you at this moment.
And you have spent years deconstructing these magic tricks and applying scientific analysis to them in order to understand the psychological interplay between the magic and the cognitive biases and influences that the person is experiencing at that point in time. It seems that magicians use a whole host of different techniques in order to manipulate people, and one such psychological technique involves forcing. Can you tell me exactly what forcing is?
Yeah, so forcing is, again, from a psychological point of view, because some magicians might not agree with this, but they are all the techniques that magicians have to influence someone to choose something specific, whether it's an item, a card, a number, while giving the choice that this, while giving the illusion that this choice was completely free and out of like any influences. So there are a lot of different techniques. We've created a taxonomy of these techniques, and the two main categories are what we call decision forces and outcome forces. So the decision forces are kind of the purest ones, if I can say, which are all the techniques in which the magician will actually try to influence the decision directly. So they can play with your psychological biases, maybe make a card more visible than the others or stuff like this to influence your choice, but still give you this feeling of freedom. And the outcome forces are all the techniques in which you are going to have a choice as a spectator, like taking a card, but this choice will not have any impact on what's going to be the outcome of the trick. So, for instance, you are going to touch certain cards during the trick, and you're going to have the feeling that this action is going to impact the outcome of the trick. They are going to be maybe the last card that you're going to have and that you're going to play with. But this action of touching the cards that you wanted is somehow not going to have any impact on the outcome of the trick. So again, there are many techniques to do so, and these ones, the outcome forces, are very very safe for magicians.
Am I right in saying that there was nothing in the literature about these forcing techniques prior to your having researched it?
Actually, there was, I think, just one paper which was from a Canadian colleague who's called Jay Olson, and he did a research with the visual riffle force, we call, which is a technique in which you make one card more visible than the others. And he had like very, very strong results. And yeah, then I dedicated my entire PhD to all these kind of other techniques.
And then forcing uses or can use a thing called restriction. You've also done some studies on this. What exactly is restriction in this context?
So restrictions can be done in different ways. So it can be done, for instance, in verbal ways. So, for instance, I'm going to ask you to think of simple geometric forms, like a square or a triangle. And so, just by stating square and triangle, I know that you might, like, you very likely not to take these ones. So, it's a very subtle way of restricting your choice. Magicians really like this type of techniques, but from what I've seen, they don't work this well. People seem to just choose specific things. even without this type of restriction. And then we can have restrictions which are more physical. So I'm not going to go too much into detail, but basically handling the cards or presenting the cards in ways which are, well, restricting you physically in what you can do, what you can take or not take, and this kind of approach.
And again, all of these techniques are being used by the magician in order to manipulate and influence the person who they're doing the trick on. Compliance. Tell me what compliance is, because again, we spoke about restriction, but you can have compliance without restriction. First of all, what is compliance? And then how can you have compliance without restriction then, as far as trying to influence somebody is concerned?
Well, I guess compliance would work without any type of subtleties. Like I would say that compliance is just the fact that you will agree with something or you will go with something, but even consciously. And magicians try to like be more subtle than this and maybe try to influence you on another level. So if we take decision forces, as the spectator has to feel free for the choice, I think we wouldn't talk about compliance, but more maybe suggestibility or sensitivity to certain influences.
The technique of tapping somebody on the shoulder, then, what would that be categorized as?
This is more like, depends in which context, I'd say. This is like compliance without pressure techniques. So without having like very explicit restrictions. So for instance, like touching someone, we know that implicitly it's associated with like higher status. So maybe because unconsciously we will perceive this person as having higher status, we will comply with the request.
Is it true that when people know that their selection is being forced, they still don't understand that their selection isn't entirely their own? I think I've seen even yourself do card tricks online, and you are kind of forcing the person to go in a particular direction. And even though that person knows they're being forced to go in a particular direction and select a particular card, they still don't understand that you're actually forcing them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I guess it depends on the technique, for sure. We've studied some techniques in which, I guess at the end, when you explain to people, you were forced, this is what happened, and your choice was not free. What happened very often is that people really struggle to understand this, and they tend to say, no, that was my free choice. So it's something that may be hard to grasp for people, like feeling very free for that choice and then being told this is not what happened and like everything was controlled from the beginning. Then there are some techniques in which you, for sure, you know that you can know that you are being forced and they are still going to work. It's not going to be a great forcing technique in a trick because, well, you won't have this sense of freedom, but some techniques allow magicians to still be effective, efficient in their techniques, even though people might have a hint of what's happening.
People will be very familiar with this particular term I'm going to mention, misdirection, which we know that magicians use all the time. From a psychological perspective, what exactly is happening to us when we succumb to misdirection?
Well, misdirection is about attracting your attention, well, in magic, attracting your attention away from the point of interest that you want to hide. And so it's all about controlling attention, really, and just, making something interesting for your attention to be catched so that you can work with something else in the background.
In terms of somebody being misdirected, how much of their ability to be misdirected is based on the fact that they're probably in an entertaining environment, out on a night out or at a show or whatever it is, and they have a magician in front of them. So they are openly receptive to being entertained and to being seduced more or less by the magician.
Yeah, well, I guess some people who won't, for instance, some people who like hate magic or like just can't stand not understanding how things are done are probably going to be more hard to be misdirected, for sure. Because they are going to be, watch the hands all the time to check what's happening. So they're not going to like fully immerse themselves into the experience and the performance. So for sure, if you have this like very rigid way of like, no, I don't want to be tricked, and you want to watch everything that's going on, you might not be fully fooled, I guess. But if the magician noticed this as well, he can also, or she can like play with this and find ways to work around this.
Well, one magician who you mentioned already who is certainly capable of working wonders is Derren Brown. He's absolutely terrific. I'm very familiar with him. I've been watching him on TV for years. And I know that you've attempted to perform some of the card tricks that he's famous for yourself. I'm just wondering, having
attempted those card tricks, do you have a greater appreciation for the brilliance of somebody like Darren Brown from a psychological perspective, his ability to be able to manipulate and entertain all at the same time?
Not really, because, well, I think I was very naive when I started, and I like started to like love Darren Brown because I was sure that he was using this kind of techniques all the time, which is not the case at all. He does some stuff like this, but it's not like when you see him like on stage and doing like his shows, he's gonna do some hypnosis, like genuine hypnosis, but he also plays a lot with like making you think that he's gonna do some psychological stuff when he's not, and he's absolutely sure that it's gonna end as he wants. I still love his work and appreciate, like, I think he's the best. I just really love what he does. But studying these techniques gave me, yes, a new appreciation for what magicians do and their skills, really. Although, like, sometimes I'm a bit jealous of, like, people who still have this, like, wow feeling, because I struggle to get this again because I know the techniques. In another way, appreciate magic. Yeah, I appreciate magic in another way, and I appreciate all the technical skills behind it.
Okay, so we've been talking about different techniques involved in manipulating people, influencing people, diverting their attention and away and misdirecting their attention, etc. Why is it that we human beings seem to be so easily influenced? Because that seems to be my takeaway from having read some of your work and your observations and watched some of your previous interviews.
Yes, that's definitely the conclusion that I got as well from all the research that we've done. And I was surprised myself, like it was very hard sometimes to break some tricks and make people understand that they were being forced, because it's very, very robust. We haven't done any studies looking at individual differences, but the external factors seem to be what explain most of it. So for instance, having like, like being like overwhelmed with cognitive load. So having a lot of things to think of at the same time. If I ask you to count some numbers, like in a weird way, you're going to like allocate all these resources to this. So your brain is not going to be able to work on something else. And maybe you're not going to see that you're being fooled at this moment, being tired, being hungry, or all kind of things that can influence you as well. Just like all the things that can take resources from you are going to make you more sensitive to all kind of other stuff. So this, like when you go to like buying groceries and you're hungry, you're going to be way more likely to like buy food that you don't need, for instance. If you have like a lot of your mind and you go into like this automatic type of thinking, you're going to be for sure like influenced way more easily. It's just the fact that our brain has a limited amount of resources, and especially right now with all the social media and like all the information that we get all the time, we kind of get overwhelmed. And we fall very easily into automatic type of thinking and acting, really. And that's why we take shortcuts and we fall victim to all kind of biases, because our brains can't handle an unlimited amount of information at the same time, and becomes very easy to fall victim to a lot of biases.
So essentially, the brain takes the easy option. It's kind of lazy at times because it has a finite amount of resources that it can give attention to at any given moment in time. And that way, that is what makes us much more receptive to outside influences and also internal influences and biases.
Yeah, exactly. That's completely what's happening. We have like, so I guess like many people know about this now, but we have like two type of thinking, like system one and system two. System one is like the very fast, quick way of reacting, automatic type of thinking. And system two is more like slow and reflective. And if the system two is overloaded, we're going to go for system one, and we're going to fall victim to shortcuts and biases for sure.
I think that was from Daniel Kahneman, wasn't
exactly
it? System one and two thinking. Can I ask you then, how do we stop ourselves then from succumbing to our brain's laziness? So how can we prevent ourselves from being so easily influenced?
Well, I don't have the ultimate solution, but I always say that the first step is to work on your awareness of yourself. Just become aware of your own biases, how you work as a human being, how your brain works, and yeah, be aware of like very important biases, such as like the confirmation biases, which is the fact that you tend to look for and remember information that you like confirm what you already believe in. So just being aware of how your brain works, how you can get influenced, how easily you are influenced is the first step, because that's something that's quite funny. Like during my research as well, like participants who arrived and were like very confident and like or like, yeah, I know tricks and you're not going to have me. This overconfidence tends to make them like even more sensitive to external influences. So the first step is very important, just being aware that as a human being, you have shortcuts, you have biases, and you can be easily influenced, especially in a specific context. Then I think just like trying to use critical thinking, always asking questions, looking for evidence, examining like the logic behind an argument, diversifying your sources of information, and like taking action to counteract these biases is something that we all need to do. And take your time. We need to slow down because we know that when we don't have much time, we tend to again go into automatic type of thinking and don't think too much, which is completely normal. So it's always important to recognize that you are making a decision and slow down a bit so that you're not influenced by all external factors. And something that I really like to look into and that I kind of suspect, and I think some research are starting to look into this, is mindfulness. I think that meditation can help a lot. Taking the time to do some mindfulness exercises and being consistent with it, I suspect would highly likely help with this kind of things.
Having done years of research on magic and the psychological phenomena underpinning magic, does magic still have magic for you, though, at this stage? I know your appreciation of it is probably slightly different, but does it still have any magic for you?
Not that often, but yes, still sometimes when I see like great shows but even still with like magicians friends who show me something that I've never seen before. Yes, and then again I have another type of appreciation when I understand the skill behind them. So sometimes yes, I'm happy about it.
I'm always fascinated by how the mind works, and this is a slightly different angle to take. If people want to find out more about the work that you're doing, I know you have a book out. I'll give that a mention now. It's called Psychology of Magic from Lab to Stage. But if people want to seek you out online and find out more about you, where can they go?
You have everything on my website most of the time. I try to update it as much as possible, which is dralicepayez.com, I think. You'll probably put the link. And I put
I will
some
indeed.
updates on my Instagram as well about papers coming out or just events and stuff like this.
Terrific. Well, I'll pop all the links in the show notes for this episode. But for the moment, thank you so much for giving me of your time today, Dr. Alice Pius.
Thank you, Mathieu.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode of the Happy Habit Podcast. A reminder, if you are enjoying this series, please show your support. Like, subscribe, share, and leave the podcast a positive rating. Many of you have done so already. Please take the time to do it. It'll only take you 2 seconds, 3, 4, or 5 stars, whatever you believe we have earned. Also, we are on YouTube and on Instagram now if you want to actually look at the videos of these episodes. Until next time, stay happy.